Welcome to WorkSpan, a World at Work podcast on building a productive, inspired, and committed workforce with award-winning podcast host Tom Alexander and World at Work columnist Charles Epstein. Now, here's Tom and Charles.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to WorkSpan. My name is Tom Alexander, and as always, I am joined by my good friend and podcast partner. He is Charles Epstein. Hey, Charles.
Yeah. Hey, Tom. Today, we're going to be speaking about apprenticeships with Julie Lammers, who is Senior VP Advocacy and Corporate Social Responsibility with the American Student Assistance, ASA. And you know, eager to talk with her about an article in which she was widely quoted, a hashtag Evolve article that was titled Apprenticeships Are a Growing Attractive Solution for U.S. Employers. So, you know, we're going to come at this from a whole range of angles. And as you know, there is a move in both the public and private sector to eliminating or minimizing certain educational requirements in order to lower the bar, get people into some of these positions, give them some opportunities to get acquainted with the job and a particular company. And companies view it as a very good investment in finding talented people, developing them. And in many cases, they go on to work very productively for that organization. So looking forward to speaking with Julie about this.
Absolutely. Julie Lammers next, right here on WorkSpan. Stay tuned. Want to elevate your business from good to exceptional? Check out hashtag Evolve, a free bi-monthly publication for any leader in HR, business, rewards, and people management who's dedicated to building outstanding organizations, offering insights and analysis passionately crafted by knowledgeable thought leaders and veteran journalists. Hashtag Evolve can help you speed the evolution of your workplace into next-level excellence. Start reading today at worldatwork.org/next-level. Lammers is a Senior Vice President, Advocacy and Corporate Social Responsibility, American Student Assistance, that's ASA. Julie has broad and extensive public sector experience from the Massachusetts State Senate to the House of Commons to the U.S. Senate. She was recently widely quoted in a hashtag Evolve article titled Apprenticeships Are a Growing Attractive Solution for U.S. Employers, which is the topic of today's conversation. And Julie joins us today from Boston. Julie, hey, how are you?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, wonderful to have you. And please say hello to my podcast partner, Charles Epstein.
Hi, Charles. Great to talk to you.
Yes, yeah, same, Julie. Thanks so much for taking the time with us today. Yeah, before we get to your work with the ASA, and the topic of apprenticeships, you were an intern, as Tom mentioned, with the Massachusetts State Senate. I don't think he mentioned you were an intern, but your association with the Massachusetts State Senate, then an intern with the House of Commons, which looked like it overlapped with your time at London School of Economics. What was it like going from one government body to a completely different one, let alone in a different country?
It was eye-opening. Yeah, and thanks for that. And I think that experience in really learning about government by doing it rather than just sort of theoretically studying it is one of the reasons why I am so passionate about the idea of chips and work-based learning. But it really was eye-opening. I think I had spent some time at the Massachusetts State House and talking about issues that were very local and community driven. And I didn't expect when I went to, you know, the British government's version of a federal government that I would be talking about very similar issues. People would be calling about issues about dog parks and local sort of community issues to their federal government because it is a very different structure. There's no state structure. There's no intermediary level of government besides a maybe a county government there. So they would call their federal government for very local issues, which was something I did not anticipate going into a federal system and a parliamentary system that is just very different than our own.
Yeah, well, to quote Senator, used to be a senator from your neck of the woods, Tip O'Neill, all politics is local. So it sounds like it was constituent service.
It really was.
But at the federal level.
It really was. It was everyday constituent issues, concerns about, electricity and right. and pensions and all right. of those local issues that really are a critical piece of government work was driven by their federal representatives in parliament, very much similar to what happens in our state governments as well.
Right, right. Yeah, we could have a whole conversation on the difference between, our legislative bodies here in the House of Commons or in that parliamentary system, everything from, the dynamics of fundraising and how that changes everything to how legislative aides, work.
And interestingly, that the gentleman that I worked for switched parties a few years after I had worked for him, and it changed the entire makeup of the government there, because he went from the Labour Party to the Liberal Democratic Party, and it shifted the balance of power in the parliamentary wow. system. So right. it was just really interesting to see it working firsthand.
Yeah, so he sort of moved down this continuum rather than that one. The other one might have been a little bit more problematic as far as holding on to your staff, that would have been mm-hmm. kind of a tectonic change thing. And last, before we get into what we really want to get into here, in one word, it could be more than one word if you feel that you need more than one word, how would you characterize your time working as a congressional aide in the office of the late Senator Ted Kennedy?
So I will take two. I'll say educational and inspiring. I think he was a wonderful boss. Worked harder than anyone. And so we were always inspired by his leadership and wanted to work hard for him.
Excellent.
Julie, if you will, tell us a little bit about your role with the ASA and how did it lead you to the topic of apprenticeships?
Yes. So American Student Assistance, we are a national nonprofit, and our focus is on ensuring young people have the opportunity to understand their career goals and then chart a course to post-secondary education and career success. And what that looks like for us is that we work pretty diligently to make sure that young people no later than middle school have really started to have conversations about what their career options could be, how that aligns with their interests and what they're good at, what the world will pay them for and what the world needs. All of those conversations, we aim to ensure that young people are having at a much earlier age. The next step of that then is to ensure that by the time they're leaving high school, they've had the opportunity to experience some of those activities, whether it's a work-based learning experience, a pre-apprenticeship program, or an entrepreneurship experience, some opportunity to take the things that they believe they like and love and translate it into real world work. What we find frequently is about half of those kids then decide that they actually hated that thing and they're no longer going to pursue it in post-secondary education. Mm. But really the goal is, how do we help young people make much more deliberate and better informed choices when it comes to post-secondary education?
I'm sorry, Julie.
No, go right ahead, Charles.
No, I was going to ask, to what extent has your experience as an intern with the Massachusetts State Senate, then an intern with the House of Commons, which is another way of saying apprenticeship, I think, mm-hmm. How much did that inform what the work you're doing now?
It drives a lot of it. I think I got my first job. My job with Senator Kennedy came through an internship. So the reality is that a lot of young people can hone their interests and experiences and careers by sort of testing and trying through work-based learning. It allows them to clarify more clearly the type of work that they like to do, eliminate the things that they understand they don't like to do, and really pick a path that's more deliberate. And I think when we're thinking about apprenticeships, it is a different way of people to for young people to experience post-secondary education, learning through work rather than sitting in a classroom. And that is increasingly a way that we're seeing young people want to learn and want to enter the job to the job market.
It's almost like a whole different work style.
It is, absolutely. We do see that in high school, the young people that have had experiences with work-based learning, internships, pre-apprenticeships, find much more connection between the work they're doing in high school when they can connect it to real-world experience. It makes it much better, easier to understand why they're doing math if they have to experience it on the job, you know,
exactly.
a couple of days later.
The answer to the age-old question, Mom, why am I worried about the grades I'm getting in algebra? It doesn't apply to anything outside of these classes.
So. Absolutely. So that real world application, we do see increases retention, increases persistence in high school, and so really linking that critical real world experience is very important.
Yeah, well, as you know, apprenticeships have traditionally been an option for training young workers for blue-collar jobs. It's now been extended to other jobs, for instance, tech jobs. What has been driving this change?
So I think there are a few things that are driving it. First, it is increasingly, since the pandemic, young people are approaching post-secondary education differently. Many of them shifted the way they were consuming post-secondary education during the pandemic, meaning that they had to do it online. Some of them were working instead of going to school. And so their perceptions of what they need from post-secondary education has changed. But we also see increasingly, and this is sort of a consistent challenge, right, that employers are saying they're not getting what they need from traditional post-secondary education. I saw a research study from a recruiting firm in the last a couple of years ago now. It's called Instructure, which is the recruiting firm. But they said that only 8% of hiring managers believed that young people were ready to enter the workforce and sort of start their work immediately. Everyone else needed to be retrained in some way. And so because there is that training that is already happening, we are seeing a huge shift from employers who are saying, I'm just going to do it myself. I'm going to train people on the job. I'm going to create my own credential, which certainly has made things a little bit more complicated. Credential Engine is an entity that sort of looks at this market and says that there's now over 1 million different credentials available in post-secondary education. And that's largely because Google is creating it themselves. Microsoft has their own, all of these business entities are saying, if higher education isn't giving me what we need, I'm going to hire someone, train them myself, and give them my own credential. And so there is that double shift of a Gen Z thinking differently about what they want from post-secondary education, and the business is saying, I'm just not getting what I need from traditional systems, and so I'm going to rethink how I train young people.
You know, Julie, the article mentioned that local community colleges have been a great part of the ecosystem by sharing apprenticeship opportunities with their students. What's the ASA's role in this ecosystem? How do you work with community colleges to help companies fill their talent pipelines?
So we don't work directly with community college. Our role really is more of a convener of some of the great practices that are going on. Community colleges have historically been played a huge role in the apprenticeship sort of training and education certification of a lot of what is happening. You know, I think there's a great example of Aon Financial is an organization that created their own apprenticeship probably 5 or so years ago. Mm-hmm. And they did it by partnering with community colleges in their local area to provide the educational training components that they believed their employees would need so that Aon could train people internally on business practices and at the same time work with a community college to ensure that young people were actually finishing this apprenticeship with both the Aon training as well as a community college credential associate's degree. And so it becomes a joint partnership between a business and a post-secondary educational entity to ensure that across the board, so there's a comprehensive training of employees, and that they have a credential that they can is valued in the marketplace, and the employer is getting what they need at the same time.
Oh, wow. That's a great program. Mm-hmm. As you know, Julie, the ASA has funded a number of organizations in the learning and apprenticeship space over the years. Tell us about a couple of them and the success they've achieved.
Yeah, so one of our, we have a multiple focuses at ASA. We have services that we provide directly to students, mainly middle school and high school students, that are our digital direct to kid students programs, and they're mainly accessed through social media, and young people can sort of learn about careers through these digital products. We also run advocacy efforts to try change sort of systems around what young people need. And then we also have a philanthropy arm. So in our philanthropy space is what you're alluding to here. We have funded a number of organizations over the years that specifically try to provide apprenticeship programs to young people. One of them, I would say, is not a traditional apprenticeship program. It's called Apprentice Learning, and it's actually an apprenticeship program for eighth grade middle school students. And it allows young people in eighth grade to begin to enter the workforce of local community businesses, build some skills, understand the working world a little bit better. I think it's not your typical apprenticeship that comes out with professional training, but more of an internship experience. So we certainly provide funding to a number of organizations like that are just really career exposure activities. More in the traditional apprenticeship space, we have partnered with organizations like Propel America, which is providing apprenticeship-like training in the healthcare field. So instead of a young person going to college and getting, you know, a certificate or degree in specific healthcare field, Propel America provides them on-the-job training, a stipend in order to do work with a healthcare provider. And they learn in a very condensed, I think it's about 4-month program, to enter a healthcare profession pretty rapidly. And much like an apprenticeship, that also provides the young person an opportunity to have hands-on learning experience, to get paid for the work that they're doing, and get a certification in the healthcare field. So that's an example of one of those. Another one that we have just launched this year is an organization called Center for Black Educator Development. And this is a really interesting program that's looking to tackle the dual challenges of diversifying our educator pipeline and providing young people with apprenticeships and work-based learning experiences in the teacher profession, which is very different than the traditional, you know, as you say, blue-collar field, hands-on learning. What this organization found was one of the key challenges to retaining teachers was really the mentorship and support in the first few years of the teacher profession, that a lot of young people, because they don't see themselves in the field, don't pursue it early enough. And so this organization really is trying to build an apprenticeship model in high schools so that young people can get mentorship from their current teachers or teachers in the teaching network and stay with them through their first few years of teaching after post-secondary education. So it really is a continuum of trying to support professional educators and diversifying our educator pipeline in the process. So that's a really one we're excited to see expand over the years. And I think, you know, states, a couple of states in the last couple of years have actually really focused on the idea of teacher apprenticeships as a way of increasing educator pipelines. So we're interested to see what the outcomes are from this program.
Yeah, great. It's a great initiative.
Our guest is Julie Lammers. Julie is a Senior Vice President, Advocacy and Corporate Social Responsibility at ASA. That's American Student Assistance. Julie, what are the returns that companies are seeing who are instituting apprenticeships, particularly outside the usual, quote, blue-collar sphere?
So I think it really is, there are a few things. I think there is a speed to employment. So you can get young people in and qualified for very specific jobs very quickly by training them internally through an apprenticeship program. It creates opportunity to understand how to fill to really get the, as I said, the sort of the right skills in fairly rapidly. There is a change management, I think, piece that employers need to undergo in order to sort of rethink, is this the type of training that we want to do? And so there does take, it does take some internal change and internal structures to be in place in order to do it. But I think the biggest return on investment is that that speed to filling needed employment pipelines. And we do actually see increased retention for employees that are there and have gone through these programs. They do feel supported by the employer. They tend to get over the sort of the struggles of entry-level employers a little bit faster because they're supported by both a cohort of other apprentices, workplace mentors that are helping them through the process. And so those retention in early years is also something that's overcome with an apprenticeship model.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, I don't think the article touched on this. I don't know if you have the information at your fingertips, Julie, but as far as mentors go, I wonder what the like top two or three drivers for being a mentor are. I'm sure there's some degree of personal satisfaction, but you know, a mentor also has job responsibilities, is managing a team, is juggling a lot of things. And every hour spent with a mentee, if you will, is not spent doing what he is paid to do.
Yeah, that's true. But I think there's also an opportunity, particularly with more junior employees, to provide them the opportunity to develop some of those leadership skills by being the supervisors or participating in that apprenticeship mentorship piece, right? So for maybe newer employees, I wouldn't say, you know, fresh in the door, but people that have been there a few years that don't actually have a lot of management experience themselves, managing an apprentice or an intern or, you know, through a work-based learning program can actually be a wonderful opportunity for them to be a mentor for the first time, to take a young person that is almost a near peer through the process of onboarding in an organization or understanding workplace culture. So yes, I agree that sometimes it can be challenging for more senior managers to take on more responsibility. However, we also see that people, particularly when we talk to programs that match very different age ranges, so those that are closer to retirement with those that are a lot younger, they tend to learn quite a bit from each other, from just different perspectives on how to approach work, different technologies that one might know better than the other. There is a lot to be gained from that intergenerational collaboration. And I think sometimes that's highly beneficial to an organization.
Yeah, I'm tempted not to ask you this because this could lead us into a whole other conversation, but I'm sure you've seen recent studies indicating that pandemic working at home has deprived a younger generation of opportunities for mentorship, things that you just get in a glancing way, in even not a structured way, when you show up to the workforce and somebody takes you to a side, or you know, some of these ad hoc opportunities that are no longer there.
Yes, and it's certainly a challenge in all aspects of work for young people. And we see it quite a bit in the programs we do around virtual internships. And so we've been fairly deliberate in trying to help counsel employers and coaches on what are some best practices around virtual mentoring. It's not ideal, but there are things that can be done to make sure that, you know, young people aren't slipping through the cracks and they're still getting that connection. Because we know even if someone were not to take a job with the place that they're apprenticing, 50% of jobs still come through who you know. So that mentorship piece is incredibly important for long-term career success. And really building that social capital and those social networks is a really critical component.
Yeah. You know, the article touched on this a little bit about apprenticeships and how they contribute toward diversifying the workforce. How do they diversify the workforce?
So I think it's a matter of, that social capital piece. If 50% of jobs come through who you know, and you don't have access to specific job fields, then you're sort of limited in what you can do. So, you know, one of the things that ASA focuses on is how do we get these types of opportunities to people at a younger age so that they are building the appropriate skills that they need in order to be prepared to enter the job field. And it is about being deliberate on who we're reaching out to, ensuring that all young people have access to work-based learning opportunities, to career exploration activities, that we're being deliberate in recruiting around apprenticeships, and that people see this is an opportunity to not only diversify from from a socioeconomic standpoint, but also from different skill levels, right? When you think differently about hiring, when we're not just hiring four-year bachelor degree recipients, it completely changes the pool of opportunity that it's available for hiring. Helping employers think differently about how they're approaching recruiting, the types of internal training programs that they're supporting does lead to a diversified pipeline of workers.
Julie, just one more question. What would you say are the 2 to 3 main issues companies need to consider when implementing an apprenticeship program?
So this can't be a pet project of any one person. I think that is sort of the biggest issue. An organized and well-executed apprenticeship program really needs to start from a top-down understanding of this is how we are approaching recruiting and training going forward, right? This is an important part of our business going forward, and that it is not just something someone's doing as a side project, but really has top-down leadership. I think organizations tend to think about this from sort of an HR change management position, looking at what positions internally are most appropriate to done through an apprenticeship model. Not every position will be, but there will be many positions that can sort of learn by doing, can do a lot of on-the-job training, and may not need an extensive amount of post-secondary education prior to entering the field. Internal evaluation of current job requirements and job postings, what really can be done through an apprenticeship model is really the place to start when thinking about launching one of these programs. And then what are the partners that you need in order to do it effectively? Is there a community college partner that you need another training or certification partner in order to make sure that the apprenticeship program that you're building is a robust enough model that allows for maybe credentialing of the employee on the job so that for future, employment growth, they can grow into new positions. They can build on those credentials, maybe add additional credentials on top, but really thinking through from an employee perspective, what it means from their long-term employee growth and from a business perspective, what is most appropriate for your business when it comes to training and recruiting young people.
Yeah, that's fascinating. We really appreciate your time today, Julie. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great to talk to you both.
Julie Lammers was our guest today. She is Senior Vice President, Advocacy and Corporate Social Responsibility with ASA. That's the American Student Assistance. Julie spoke to us today from Boston. We'll be back right after these words. Stay tuned. Are you feeling overwhelmed by pay equity challenges? Learn practical insights for overcoming those challenges through World at Work's three-course pay equity series. Learn from leading experts and gain a thorough grounding in pay equity practices through real-life examples and practical case studies. To learn more, visit worldatwork.org/equity. Wrapping things up on Workspan, along with Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. Julie Lammers, with quite the extensive background, Charles, and of course she worked for Senator Ted Kennedy as well.
Yeah, Massachusetts State Senate. Then she was an intern for the House of Commons. We could have spent a whole 30 minutes just talking about that, quite frankly. It's kind of fascinating. But yeah, apprenticeships, very, very big topic these days, and they're doing a range of really innovative things over at the ASA. And it was really interesting to learn what's driving apprenticeships outside the usual blue collar sphere, which of course historically is where apprenticeship programs have been implemented, and obviously some real collateral benefits as far as diversifying the workforce. I thought that was a really great insight. And of course, finishing up with some of the things that companies need to do or to consider in order to implement an effective apprenticeship program. So maybe we should take her advice, Tom. Maybe it's time for the Workspan podcast apprenticeship, some lucky young talented person, so we can groom the next generation of great podcasters. What do you think, Tom?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I mean, after all, you know, we won't be here. Well, I can only speak for myself. I don't know about you, but I'll only be here for a short time. You know,
By the way, if they remade The Graduate, it wouldn't be plastics. It would be cryogenics. Just so you know.
Yeah. Benjamin, cryogenics.
Cryogenics.
That's it. There you go. Well, Julie Lammers, we thank her for joining us today on the podcast. And of course, we thank you for listening. Until next time, for Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. We'll see you again. So long, everybody.
You've been listening to Workspan, a World at Work podcast. To learn more, visit worldatwork.org.